Business Matters, brought to you by the University of Bedfordshire Business School in partnership with Radiolab.
Today, we're really, really lucky to have Joseph Israel Obeng with us, who's a professional multimedia broadcaster.
As I said, my name is Joseph Israel. It's my first name. My surname is Obeng. I went to university, first degree in Ghana, West Africa, the University of Ghana. I studied Russian language, history, poetry, and majored in political science. I guess I should start by saying that I've always been interested in business. If you're from a West African background, business will always be part of your ethos or your understanding. And even in university and before university, I was always trying to do something. My cousins, I grew up in East London, by the way, and whenever my cousins used to come over on holiday, all I remember them is trying to do business. I mean, they'd have a sweet shop outside on the street in East London selling sweets, you know. And it always triggered something in my mind. I always say that two things in life you can't do without: a food and clothing. And so it makes absolute sense that if you wanted to do something and you didn't really know what to do, you'd either do food or you do clothing. You may not become a millionaire, but you definitely be able to put a roof over your head in some form or fashion. Having said that, when I was in university and in pre that, I never knew what I wanted to do. I'd say the things that West African parents want to hear. I want to be a lawyer, I want to be a doctor. But I could never, ever pinpoint what I wanted to do. I went a bit wayward in university, but afterwards, there was a day and I had a conversation with God, and I've told this story so many times in planes and people think I'm crazy. And the conversation went something like this: what do you want to do? And I said, well, I don't know. I said, well, what do you like doing? And since I've been very young, I've loved watching television. I've loved watching television. Now, I have to say that this thing, I really struggled with it. Because from a West African background, your parents are always on you, what you're going to do, what you're going to be, and education is key. And so I struggled and struggled and struggled. I never knew what I wanted to do. And on that day, when I was asked, what do you like doing? Quite honestly, I'm not the type of person who needs to see angels or something like that before you think it's God. And I just speak to him as I speak to you now and say, look, I like watching television. Because that's honest. I'm most happy when I was young watching television. Saturday mornings, Spider-Man, Batman, everything. I love television. And that's what I'm interested in. I mean, I'd watch movies and be able to tell you the outcome of the movie because I have the understanding. I could see what the director or what the person who wrote the story is going to do. And people used to ask me, have you watched the movie before? I said, no. And when I said I like watching television, the answer was, well, that's what you need to do. I said, what do you mean? Well, you like watching television, you work in the media. I was astounded. It seems and sounds quite simple, but from there, I was able to jump ahead. I grew up in Great Britain, so for me, the best place to work was the BBC. And 6 months later, after that conversation, I found myself working in the BBC. Having said that, I never imagined that I would be a journalist. My father's a journalist, but it was the furthest thing from my mind. As I said, I always wanted to do business. When I was in university, I started my first business around about when I was like 17, 18. I printed off business cards and I started selling juice, you know, concentrated juice, like the ones you get in the stores. I buy sugar, bags of sugar, buy them sacks of sugar, go home, use my mum's pots, buy bottles, found out how to do it, because I like to be creative. I'd be in my mum's kitchen in her backyard, you know, making different flavors, strawberry, this and that and that, and I'd sell them on campus. And that's been a theme with me throughout. And going to Ghana, the way people learn in West Africa was totally different from the way we learnt in England. They really studied.
Can I just chat for a sec? Were you born in London?
I was born in East London.
Yeah. So why did you end up going to Ghana for university?
Well, my parents carted me off to West Africa, as you do. West African parents can be very strict, depending on their ethos and their understanding. And I believe they thought we would have a better education at the time.
So the whole family moved
out? No. It was just you were myself and my sibling.
Right.
And we were sent to boarding school. West Africa.
I see. Right.
But I have to say, this was 80s England, and you're talking about East London. So you can imagine the kind of education that we were getting. And at the time, I hate to say this, but I think looking back, it's true. There wasn't that kind of push from people from an ethnicity to achieve. You know, it was either you are a sports person and then you could achieve that way. But anything beyond that, it was unless you put effort in.
Yeah.
And so this is what happened. We went to West Africa.
Right. I should say, do chip in with any questions at any time all through what we're going through here. It's not meant to be a lecture or anything to do. Just stick your hand up or whatever. Yeah.
So I found myself in the BBC 6 months later, and it was there that I realised I didn't know exactly where I wanted to be within the BBC. But
so how did you get that first position? Because that must be quite a challenge.
It was after this conversation, I just started temping. I found myself in West London, and
so you're what age now?
What age am I now? Well, that's a big secret.
No, not what age are you now? What age were you then?
When I was, let's say, in my early 20s. I've worked at the Beeb now since 1997.
Oh, right.
So we're straight out of uni.
You still work there though?
I still work there now. But I've always, since going to Ghana, I realised that there's a lot of time in a day. A lot of time in the day. So when I started working for 8 hours, you know, there's still time, you know, and when you come from that type of background or you've seen things like that, you know that people work hard. And 8 hours seemed to me to be just too short to work. I mean, what do you do with the rest of the time? And so I've always had two jobs. I'd work at the Beeb. I thought when I was in university and I'd come on holidays, I used to do security. And I continued to do that. So I'd work at night as a security guard and go into the office during the day. And I've always maintained that. But whilst I was in the BBC, I had to find a niche of what to do. What is it you want to do? For me, my understanding and what I was taught was that when you do your first degree, you're set for life. When you do a degree, you go out into the world and that's it. But obviously that isn't true today. It might have been. Some years ago, maybe 40 years ago, you could have done even philosophy and ended up somewhere and be the cream of the crop somewhere years on. But it's not the case today. You can go to university and you could be applying for a cleaner down the line, which has happened. I think in India or Pakistan, there was like over a million applications for a government cleaner. It was a story, a news story, and included with those who applied were people with PhDs and things. So it's not the case. You'd have to do some professionalism. That's why when I asked you, what do you do? And you're saying you're doing an MBA. You've obviously got in mind what you want to do, which is great. Because with the MBA, you can go on to do a niche, find yourself a niche and actually work at it there, as opposed to someone who's done a first degree in art. If they're not going to pursue art in the art world, they'd have to do something else, or they'd have to find a niche. Having said that, I've realized with hindsight that it's not necessarily going to university unless you want to do a professional course. Going to university may not be a prerequisite for other things, but education is always helpful. And if you have the time and money, I would always say to everybody, get a first degree, study, but for study's sake, for learning's sake, for the gain of knowledge.
Well, let's move away from that.
I find myself in the BBC, found a niche and said, look, I'd like to work in news, because I thought, well, you know, if you're going to work at the B, you work at news. That was my actual thought.
That was as vain as it is.
That was my thought.
BBC's got such a great name in the news.
Not even that. My father, when we're in East London, he'd force me to watch the news. You know, he'd sit me between his legs, force me to watch Trevor McDonald.
That's when you were 18.
No, this is when I was like 6, 7. He'd force me to watch the news every single time. Watch the news, watch the news, watch the news. And I think that must have made an impression on me later on. Because I was working in an office where people from the newsroom would come in, you'd interact with them. I was working in television center, and you'd see people that you see on TV just, you know, walking by, saying hello to you, or standing in the queue, just as we were downstairs, getting lunch. And, you know, I'm talking about people like from Will Smith to, you could name them, you know, they're just about. And so I thought, well, that would be a good place. And I went and did a master's in broadcast journalism at the University of Westminster. But at the time, this is when the World Wide Web, the internet, was now picking up within the United Kingdom. And so I did a course where I was able to do cross-platform, because at the time, that's what it was. What platform were you on? Either you're in print media or you're in digital media, which was online at the time, as opposed to what it is today. And that was purely text at the time, which is a foreign concept now because everything's merged. So this is where I ended up. But I've always been able to communicate effectively, especially with speech. And radio is something that I've always wanted to do regardless. And having worked in the BBC, I began to realize that there's something called a voiceover, where you don't necessarily have to be on camera or on the radio in particular, but you're able to use your voice to tell a story. As you see on the television, perhaps someone's introducing a program, or you see an advert. You don't necessarily see the person speaking, but they are telling you a story, selling something, or giving some information. So this is what I started to do again. I went to my father upstairs and said, look, this is what I found. I'm going ahead. This is a business. And I should say that I've had a number of ideas and implemented them. A lot have failed, many have failed, but it's the step forward, taking that step. Once I got to understand what a business plan was, I have a very good friend, which is, he's more of a brother to me, he did business. He owns a business in West Africa. It's a multi-million business, and he was the one at the time who was teaching me about business plans and what to do, and you get an idea, put it on paper, present your business plan and work at it. So I decided to jump into the field of voiceover work. It was online at the time. Beforehand, it used to be the case where you had to have an agent, you were carted off to a huge studio somewhere in London, or if you're in the States, in LA. But as you can see with Joe recording the audio now, the digital era changed the game totally, where you're able to do something like this with basically a kit that can fit in your pocket. 25 years ago, that was not the case.
No.
You could not do something like this. Some of the discussion we're having now, for it to be broadcast on radio, we would have to go to a studio and record it there.
Yep.
So this is where the game changed, that you're able to get broadcast quality audio, and that was the thing. Broadcast quality was a huge thing. But today, we use mobile phones and we can record a conversation, and more or less, to a degree, it's broadcast quality. So here we are, this is the digital area. I now find myself doing voiceover work, but I was treating it as a hobby.
Business Matters, brought to you by the University of Bedfordshire Business School in partnership with Radiolab.
So was that as a salaried job, or was that your own business?
This is the reason why I say that I've always had two jobs, because I treated it, I wanted to make a business out of it. I wanted to make a career out of it.
there's a learning curve to it, but I had wanted to make a career out of it. So this is where I had to begin to understand about invoicing.
And so it was your own business, and you would do a deal and arrangement to be paid so much money for doing so many tools,
for X amount,
voiceovers or whatever.
As I said, in the past, it used to be you'd have to have an agent, and they would cart you off to certain areas to audition.
Yeah.
But because of the World Wide Web and digital, the advances in digital media, you're able to do that online now, where a website would act as an agency, and people seeking voice work would go to that agency and see the people who've got samples there and choose from them, or you could audition too. And this is the case. But now you're having to be able to learn how to market yourself, which was, you know, you'd think you'd open a shop and people would see that, but you'd have to market yourself as a brand.
Mm.
You know, that you offer this and put yourself out there and use different platforms digitally. And you'd also have to understand the world you're working in with a view to how you run your business in the country. I mean, in the United Kingdom, you would have to have something like called, go to something called Companies House.
Mm-hmm.
You'd have to begin to pay tax if you're self-employed. And every year you'd have to sit down and pull your hair out before the 31st of January and make sure your taxes are done and calculate them yourself if you are a pauper like me, or pay someone like you to do accounts for you. Having said that, I need to
get a number.
So this is the things that I started to realize. And one of the big things and huge surprises was that you don't get paid immediately when you do your job.
Mm.
That was a huge surprise for me. That you could give someone, offer a service, do your very best, and do excellently in most cases, if not all cases, and have the job done. The client is satisfied and sends your praises. And when you now come to invoice, and that's a whole new thing as well, how do you invoice? What does an invoice look like? These were foreign concepts to me. And when you invoice and say, due on receipt of invoice, you're realizing that 20 days later you still haven't been paid. And then you're told that the norm is you're paid within 30 days. So you think, well, if this was my only job, what would I do from the time that I've done the work till the time that I receive payment? But this is where I think if there are schemes for self-employed businesses that you're able to get some subsidies, some loans, and to be able to see you through those kind of periods. So this, in a nutshell, has been my foray. Having said that, I have tried to do businesses in West Africa, taking containerfuls of X amount of this type of X item X to this area. I've tried to do sugar, you know, boatloads of sugar, tons and tons of sugar, and many other things. I have been a place where I've been very depressed, where it has not succeeded, where I've been disappointed. You know, I've loaded containers only to be told by the person who asks for them that they don't have the money, and they're going to explain to the business that I've contracted with that, I'm sorry, can you take everything off the container? It can no longer go and have your reputation spoiled. So what I hope to portray in just this brief analysis is that business itself can take different forms. You could do something in your kitchen and start off with. It can develop. The voice work I do, I started with a £20 computer. It was the time when broadband was just becoming a thing in the United Kingdom. So they were offering all these schemes, come get broadband, we'll give you a laptop for £20. And that's what I did. I bought a microphone, which is appreciable. I had to research microphones, and because I've been working in broadcasting, I had an idea and I had some experience of what was used in the broadcast. If it's used by the BBC, one would think that, well, yes, it's of A level. And obviously the BBC Two also works with partners like the Australian Broadcasting Corporation and things like that, and you get to know what they use, so you see what's used in the field. So I researched a microphone, and bought that. Used this £20 laptop for the first 4 or 5 years of my voiceover career. I think in the first year, I made about $10,000. A lot of my work came from the United Kingdom, from the United States. Unfortunately, I had to use that for cancer treatment for a member of my family. But I could see that it's a viable business. Only from where I'm coming from, because I was doing two jobs, I wasn't treating it as a business. I was treating it as I do this as well.
Right. So you know? Almost a hobby.
Yes, exactly. Because I do multimedia, I know that, well, this is all broadcasting. And obviously, too, I was learning. Because voiceover work is an art.
Yep.
It is an art. I mean, I think about 6 years ago, I auditioned to work as a continuity announcer on Sky, one of the Sky channels. I didn't get it. And that got me interested in continuity. Continuity is where someone introduces a program in between programs or tells you about the program and or tells you the lineup of the station. So let's say maybe you're working on ITV and you've got your favorite program and you hear in the background, oh, at 9 o'clock tonight, this is what's going to happen in this episode. That's the continuity announcer. They also write the script and they voice the script as well.
So when I first spoke to Joseph Israel on the phone to arrange this session, you just recently started working at ITV, ITV Encore, one of the digital channels here, as on continuity. And you told me you were just writing scripts at the time. Yeah. So I was really surprised. I thought, oh, these guys, I thought they just said, well, that was an interesting episode of Midsummer Murders, and now we've got Agatha Christie coming on, and, you know, I'll see you in 2 hours or something. But, oh, no, yeah. It's all written down. No, there's and well scripted.
There's a lot of work to it. I think in any business, there's a lot of work to it. I mean, a lot of business is paperwork. I mean, you can do the nitty-gritty of contracting this and that, whatever commodity, whatever it is. But then you can spend, you know, days or half of your day just doing paperwork.
Yeah.
It is surprising the makeup of business itself.
So what are you doing today? What's your
I just come off a 12
portfolio.
Hour shift. I've just come off a 12-hour shift. I work in the newsroom at the BBC. The newsroom takes in everything from home news to world news. Works for the World Service and then your national stations across the board. So it's a 24-hour building, and I just did a 12-hour shift, and I've just rushed down to come here. 2 days ago, whilst I was doing the 12-hour shift, I have a studio at home now, and one of my agents asked me to do some work for a client called Portland, some voiceover work, incidentally, a charity kind of thing for something in Ghana to do with hypertension, etc. and so on. So I did that for a couple of hours. I did it one day and they completely changed the script, and I did that the second day as well. So having done a 12-hour shift, I rush home. Whilst I'm stuck on the M1, I'm texting, not whilst driving, may I say, because I know this is being recorded. I was in traffic, explaining that I'm stuck in traffic, but I will try and make the deadline for 12:30. So these are the type of things I would do. So for instance, from here, I'll try and get some kit and probably wake up and maybe do some auditions for some work or chase up on the voiceover
work.
Yeah. But I have to say that for me, it's about creativity. A realization came when I spoke about God, and realization came that for me, everything is created. It's fascinating to me that everything that human beings use comes from the ground. There isn't a thing in this world that you cannot say doesn't come from the ground. And if you're a person of faith, then human beings also come from the ground as well. Obviously, because of my ethnicity, I refute the fact that I came from a monkey. But that argument aside, creativity is key for me. I mean, anything that you would do in business-wise, there will be an element of creativity. I mean, the shoes and the trainers that you're wearing, you chose because there is some level of creativity to it, attached to it, that attracted you. So with regards to creativity, audio, I could hear that it plays a huge part. I mean, television is nice, it's great, but then if you think about it, the things that you're taking latently with your ears is so surprising. I mean, the makeup, the soundscape now, I can hear it faintly drilling. But then it just gives you an atmosphere. One quote that I've always kept to heart is that radio is theatre of the mind. And it's a very key quote.
Can I ask, who here listens to the radio? At all? A lot? Okay, that's about half the guys here.
Business Matters. Brought to you by the University of Bedfordshire Business School in partnership with Radiolab.
But I've always done it. I can remember sitting at my desk when I was a schoolboy doing my homework. I always had radio on in the background. My mum always used to say, how can you concentrate when you've got the radio, you know, listening to a comedy programme or something like that? But somehow, I don't know, somehow you can do the maths or whatever it is and having a laugh at the same time, which makes maths a lot better, I think.
I think he said it key when you said that it paints a picture. When you listen to it, it paints a picture in your mind, and that's what drew me in, was when it paints a picture, telling a story. You know, I do write. I write for the Africa Report, but this is what I like to do. You know, I don't find it as work, and that's back to the crux of it. When I was asked, what do you like doing? I said, I like watching television. So for me, that was key. And that's helped me, because even though I'm not my core work, I'm not perhaps doing what I really want to end up being doing, I've found that over the years and over time, through experience, through trial and error, that I'm finding I'm able to position myself now whilst also gaining the skills to do so. Because you can have the idea, but if you don't have the skills, and to a degree, some experience, it's very, very difficult. You find it a lot harder. So I would say, in anything, make sure you have the skills. I mean, for me, truth is very important. I've been on so many interviews, but whenever I apply for them, whatever I've written, however embellished it may seem, is the truth. And that's very key. For me, what frightens me the most is that you're offered something and you're not able to produce the goods. That's, for me, that's key. So over time and experience, you're able to gain. And then you find yourself in different positions. I never thought I would lecture in the university. It was alien to me. I was the type of student that wouldn't turn up for lectures. But thanks be to God, I was able to understand very quickly. I remember a time I went to a lecture and realized that, he's just recounting from a book and giving it to the students. And because of my experience in West Africa, I knew that if it's from a book, all I needed to do was take the book and learn afterwards. So I never went to that lecture again.
Very poor lecturer, I should say.
Okay.
He's just recounting a book.
And then what I did is I used to get the notes that one of my colleagues who was very diligent and went to the lectures, and I studied those notes of hers. And then when I went for the exam, the lecturer and some of the other students asked me, are you part of this?
Yes, who are you?
Who am I? I said, well, yeah, I'm a student here. And when the results came, in the exam, the person that I borrowed her notes from didn't pass the exam.
Oh, no.
But fortunately, I did. So it's about the skills that you have inherently and experience that you gain. And after a period of time, you see that the experience opens other doors for you. Like I said, I never thought I'd lecture in the university. But then latently, all the experiences that you've had, and sometimes it does take time. I'm a very impatient man, but you learn patience. And from experience, when you get to a point in time, you realize, you look back and think, I've gained this. And when you're speaking to someone and they are listening to you, then you realize it's because of these experiences and because of the passage of time that you're able to impart this or that. one teacher in the secondary school that I went to, one time we were in a classroom and the teacher hadn't turned up, and it was a boarding school, and the teacher, Mr. Kitsu, came round and sat down, and we were being very rowdy, it was a boys' school, and just began to talk to us. He talked at length, but he said this, he said one thing, and this is over 25 years ago, and it's always kept in my mind. He said, well, look, if someone's going to teach you anything or say something to you, even if you're disinterested, whatever you can glean from it, which you think may be beneficial to you, let everything else pass away, but just retain that one thing. And that's a piece of advice that I've kept key lately. And I thought, well, you know, yeah, fine. But it's true. It's very, very true. I mean, I could be waffling. I've waffled on. But if there's just one thing that you can garner, it will be helpful. As I said, I've been on a number of interviews and a number of schemes. I've been at the foot of people that you see on television. I won't mention names. And at one particular time, I was sent to a person who is on television today, and probably be on television today as we speak, literally. And this person, I was dropped at their feet and said, the person was told to impart some knowledge or impart some experience. And the person's retort to me was, I don't know what I can teach you. Because of this experience with this teacher, I thought to myself, well, if I was in your position, and a student or someone who was hoping to come into this field were put at your feet and was said you were supposed to impart something, you could even just tell them your experience.
Yep.
Just your experience of how you ended up here. Because if my parents actually knew that sending you to university did not necessarily give you the keys to the kingdom, and it just told me that, it would have been very valuable for me. Even just that piece of information that I would not expect, okay, just do a first degree. Perhaps I would have done a first degree, but done something like you guys are doing. I would have done an MBA, because I know that with that, it can be a greater stepping stone as opposed to doing something like political science if I'm not going to be a politician or work in some type of analysis within the political field.
So, okay, thanks. So, I just wanted to ask everybody here, do you all know what you want to do career-wise? Have you got it sort of relatively clear? I won't go around asking everybody what they're going to do, but are you sort of relatively clear what you're going to do when you finish your degree here? Don't be afraid to say no.
I'll be doing real estate. I think I'll still continue to do real estate with my family, though.
Yeah. I mean, working as I do, you begin to be able to study and read people. For instance, if you're interviewing, you would definitely need to read the person you're interviewing, because sometimes your interviewee will not like to be interviewed. So whilst you were sat there, and obviously I'm very good with accents, you come from a West African background, probably Nigerian. So with the MBA, if you don't mind me saying, you've just mentioned with the family business. So it's a stepping stone for you. You know what you want to do. So for some areas, it's just a rubber stamp that you've got this, you've got the experience, you've got the understanding, and you're pushed into the family business. It's great. But in a situation where you don't know what you want to do, how do you find out what you want to do?
Anyone here who doesn't know what they want to do? This isn't a career service exercise, by the way. I'm just interested, because I was going to come back to Joseph Israel and say,
I don't know what to do, but sometimes it's difficult because I'm studying marketing and international marketing. I've got an idea of what I want to do,
Okay, I'm just going to repeat that so it's captured on the microphone. It will not repeat all of that, but
so
a guy who's studying international marketing, he's got a reasonably clear idea of where you want to be in 15 years or so's time, but not quite sure about how to get that on that first step on the ladder sort of thing.
Because aiming too high. I don't know if I'm aiming too high or should I
bring I don't think you're aiming too high, but what I've noticed is that it's very difficult to get in anywhere, especially without experience. And this is where I used to get frustrated,
because I believed I had the skills. I made sure that I have the skills. But anywhere, for whatever reason, I was being turned away. So that's where I decided that, look, if this is the situation, I know I have the skills, and some of these things are not outside of your remit nowadays because of the way the world is and because of technology. So you do it yourself. That's my view. Get up and do it yourself. Half the time I've spent my holidays interning. And I believe you me, people 50 into their 40s, late 40s, early 50s are interning for free. I used to go into the city. I'm interested in public relations. I used to go into the city on my holiday and work free of charge and learn the job. Once you've got those skills and you're still not being offered, do it yourself. I believe that I could do documentaries. I could work as a producer. I wasn't being offered anything that I used to apply for. I did a documentary. I produced a documentary myself. I flew halfway across the world, recorded people, interviewed people, packaged it together, as you, Joe, do, and did it myself. I had help from a very nice gentleman, but you begin to do things yourself. I mean, it's quite obvious with you that you're interested in advertising and marketing because you listen to the radio, particularly for the adverts, you see? So it's something that you like doing. Apply it to your daily, to the business that you want to do, what you want to work in. If you're going to work in real estate, find something unique within it. There is always an angle with business. People come to me for ideas because I think, and you think you're aiming too high. Family members have told me that I've got grandiose ideas, but I've not let that bug me down after a period of time. Because fine, it's the grandiose ideas that people will come to you for. That's what's going to separate you from the rest. Find that niche, find that unique bit or color or edge and use it. If no one's offering it to you, do it yourself. Because you could spend a number of years knocking on doors and it won't be given to you. At least that's what I found.
Business Matters, brought to you by the University of Bedfordshire Business School in partnership with Radiolab.
But I think the point there is that you wouldn't set up on day one your own marketing establishment, or your marketing establishment would be your bedroom. And what you would do is you would perhaps find a friend or a fellow student here or whatever who's got a little, I don't know, a website business that he's kicking off, and you would organise a small little marketing program, a marketing plan for him or her, and then you've got that for nothing, like Joseph Israel was saying, and start small and get bigger, and then you can go to the next person and say, look, I've done this and this is working now, I'd like to do something with you.
It sounds simplistic, but that is the way. As I said earlier, I've always been interested in business and tried things. I remember a time in secondary school where we did a show. We had a number of schools in the region that came to it. And when we said we were going to do it, we were worried about finance. We were five guys, and everybody said, look, I have this amount. And we said, look, let's set this budget and let's work to it. Now, between the five of us, we were able to use that money to advertise, to print. I wrote scripts, I directed plays, someone did something else. So it's as simplistic as that. From your bedroom, connect with this person, connect with that person, and offer. You'd be surprised because they're probably in the same boat as you. And so it may not be monetary that you have to use to pay them. You could offer a service. You have a skill that they're ailing about, and you offer it to them. They have a skill that you are alien about, and it becomes a barter. And that's the way it works when you're trying to do something yourself. But the main thing is get up and do it. And also about perseverance, because a lot of the time you'll be knocked back. With regard to the voiceover work that I do, you could audition and audition and audition and audition and not get the job. And you'd think, well, am I not good enough? But there was a quote that someone posted and said that it's not about the rejection, it's all about the selection. And when you look at it differently from that angle, I mean, imagine
that all of us are auditioning for a voiceover with a Punjabi accent. I might be able to do it well. I grew up in East London, but somebody else might be able to do it better. Does that mean that you're not good? It's just about the selection. They selected this person. And because they selected this person, these other people didn't get the job. So it's not about the rejection, it's about the selection.
Mm.
So you look at it differently and persevere. And that's not just about business, I think it's about life as well. Persevere.
That's a good point. We're going to wrap up in a few minutes, so I just want to invite some more questions before we do, on anything, on broadcasting. I had a very good chat with Joseph Israel just before we started off, and he's taught me a whole lot about what goes on in the BBC newsroom just earlier. I found that very interesting, but or about starting up, building your own career, whatever. So any questions from anybody, please take the opportunity. That's what Joseph Israel is saying, take opportunities.
And when you get in there, it's not really what they say it is.
Yeah. I think once you start working, you begin to realize that nothing is like that. You see it on the outside, but when you go inside, nothing is like that. Your perception of it is totally different. When I was growing up, I thought, well, people who work in offices, you know, they know how to type and everything. But when I went to the BBC, in a particular office at the time, one of the managers was typing like this. This was before I worked in news, was typing like this. And when I saw that, I guess I'm an overachiever, or that's what we're being brought up. When I saw them typing with two fingers, it's typing nonetheless. Hats off to the person, that's how they do it. But for me, I would have thought, you know, you'd be, and that would be everybody's level, and that's not the case. With you guys now, because a lot of you have grown up with the digital era, fine, you know, it's second nature. But that wasn't my perception. My perception was, everybody's of a level. So when you begin to see things like that, then you realize to yourself, well, this is not beyond me. It's not beyond me. I can fit in here. I can do well. I can achieve. So to answer your question, no, my perception of it wasn't what I went to see at all. And as I was saying earlier, it was only then I began to realize that I need to find my niche within the corporation itself, because it's huge. You know, it's not just one thing this person does. This looks creative. This just may be your administration, accounting, there's lawyers. There's everything.
And I'll just add to that, I may have told this story before, but so as you probably know, I used to work for Tesco for a long time. When Tesco.com first started, the online Tesco business that's probably one of the biggest online businesses in the UK now, it had a team of, I think, four people working for it in Welwyn Garden City, quite close to here. And one of them was the systems guy. This is back in about 1990, early 1990s probably, maybe 95, something like that. So a long time ago, but, you know, internet in its very early, relatively early days and that sort of thing. And internet shopping, even earlier days. So the guy who used to actually run, I used to run the finance department, who used to run the finance systems, had been seconded to work on the, you know, this new internet thing, you know. And basically they were given a bit of space about the size of this room here, and said, well, off you go, see what this internet thing's all about. You know, it's not so fantastic great strategy for Tesco to go into. It's just explore it. You know, here's a bit of a budget, get a big computer and do. And they set up using one store, Hatfield, which is near Welwyn Garden City, and an area around it where people could make online orders. And so I went to see this colleague of mine. I said, well, show me how this works. I want to understand the back office of it. So he said, right, okay. So what happens is the customer, you know, keys in their order of groceries or whatever. It comes in, we can see it on the screen here. We then print it out onto paper, and then this lady over here types it in to another system, which then generates an order that goes to the store for somebody in the store to pick the products off the shelf and put in the thing. I said, you are joking. You're saying you print it off of one system and then somebody has to completely retype it to go into the other one. How amateurish is that? But that's how it started. It was not at all streamlined. It was very, very basic. And, you know, to the outside world, everyone thought, oh, it's really sophisticated systems and that sort of thing. But these things start very basically. You know, I don't think they still do it like that now. But it just surprised me. I thought, we're really, really going at the frontiers of science here. And actually, it was a lot more basic than that. And that's how, you know, your point about perceptions can be very different to reality is quite useful. And that's where anybody can come in and contribute, because particularly if it's something new, everyone's got a view that's a valid view, which is good.
Don't despise small beginnings.
Good. All right. Well, I think we're going to finish there. So, Joseph Israel, really, thank you for that. It's really inspiring sort of story, really.
I hope it wasn't just chaff in the wind.
No, it was good. I hope we enjoyed that. Thanks very much.
For more information, visit radiolab.beds.ac.uk/businessmatters.